Good evening and welcome to the final late debate of 2020. Now, we were just watching the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar there on prime time before we came down to studio. If you missed it, and as Shane was telling you there in the news bulletin, we will have new restrictions most likely in place between Christmas and the new year. They're talking about hospitality closing again, more restrictions on the number of households going down from 3 household visits to 1 household, although we're told currently, they're thinking that retail and personal services will stay open. That's including non-essential retail. That's the big news tonight and will be the big news coming into this weekend. But for once, for one night only, we're going to set all of that aside because you have arrived at the annual Late Debate Political Awards Night. And if you're watching us on news now, you will no doubt by now be marvelling at the great lengths to which our BCO Elaine Conlon went to bring some Christmas cheer to Studio 10 for this glittering occasion. Let me right away introduce our prestigious panel of judges. Former parliamentary correspondent of the Irish Times and current man about town and editor at large, Michael O'Regan. We have Philip Ryan, political editor with Independent Newspapers. We have Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. And socially distancing down in an adjoining studio, we have Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at NUI Galway and political columnist with the journal.ie. And also Harry McGee, political correspondent with the Irish Times. Now, do let us know what you think of our choices. We can text us on 51551. You can email latedebate@rte.ie or indeed you can tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, without further ado, let's go to our first category, and that is the orator of the year. Can I have, I'll go to our other studio first. Larry Donnelly, can I have your nomination, please, for orator of the year?
Yes, I'm nominating the person you just mentioned, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. And the reason I'm nominating him is because he gave that speech in March from the United States outlining what was ahead of us for this year. I suppose we couldn't really fully know everything that was ahead of us, but he delivered a speech in which he, I think, appealed to the best instincts we had while at the same time highlighting just how difficult a road this could be. And I think it's a speech that stands out because it's one that is going to be recalled and remembered for a very, very long time. I think COVID obviously is the story of the year, and I think that that speech probably encapsulated everything that there was to it from an Irish point of view.
And do we have that? Yeah, can we? We'll just play that, a little taste of that speech, which I think everyone will remember where they were when they heard it.
Above all, we all need to look out for each other. Ireland is a great nation. We're a great people. We've experienced hardship and struggle before. We've overcome many trials in the past with our determination and our spirit. And once again, we will prevail.
Yeah, there was just something about that speech which was, kind of stopped everyone in their tracks. Harry, you nominated Leo Varadkar for that moment as well.
I did. Yes, the Galway jury is ringing in and we're giving our douze pois to Leo Varadkar as well. Now, he's not a great speechifier normally. His delivery, he's no Edmund Burke in terms of his delivery. But that speech really captured the moment and set the tone for the response to this huge and imminent threat that was coming our way at the time. And his prose was freshly minted at the time. Some of it has become quite cliched since then.
Yeah, but that was our first bang of
we're Seamus all in this together and we're just going to be a St. Patrick's Day like no other. But at the time, you know, it was pre-cliche COVID transferable speech, and it was really good. And we have some very good natural orators in the Dáil. Richard Boyd Barrett is always spectacular in terms of his delivery. But Leo doesn't have that in terms of his delivery. But that speech was particularly well crafted.
Okay, and you mentioned Richard Boyd Barrett there. Michael O'Regan, he was your nomination.
That's right, Katie. I struggled with this, I have to say, because if you look to orators in the Dáil, you have to go back to Joe Higgins, for instance, who was a splendid orator. If you go back further, go way back, you go back to the late John Kelly. the UCD academic who was an absolutely marvellous orator, both in content and delivery. And if you go way, way back, you go back to the James Dillons and that. But I think, yes, Richard Boyd Barras on ballads. Now, he needs to lower the decibel a bit. He needs to go to what used to be known as the Bunny Car School for the potentially sincere and, you know, be trained to modulate matters a bit. But I think overall, he is the Dáil's best orator.
Aoife.
Yeah, in the same vein, as for the dramatics, I've gone for Piers Doherty. I think, you know, the dramatic kind of way that he speaks, and he's, some people would say, no, you're kind of expecting it every time he stands up, it's the same kind of thing. But I think over the years, and especially in the last year and on Budget Day, I thought for the flair for the dramatics that he has as well, I went for Piers Doherty.
Yeah, and I do think Piers Doherty comes into his own as well at committees, because he is forensic about seeing the holes and things pursuing them.
We saw that a lot, you know, when he does so much work on insurance, and we saw that and the insurance committee when they were before the Oireachtas committee, and, you know, he went viral for the way it was like a teacher, if you didn't bring your homework, he was definitely going to find out. And I think, yeah, there's something about him, and obviously I was going to pick somebody from Donegal anyway.
Obviously, so. We know what you're like. Philip, who's your nomination?
Mine's kind of the antidote to all of these, I thought. I was going to pick Alan Kelly because the man knows drama. Everything he does is unprecedented and the hyperbole is everywhere. But instead of that, I decided to go for someone who just brings a calming effect every time he speaks in the Dáil. And that's another Donegal TD, Thomas Pringle. The man has the most soothing voice in the Dáil. Like, I wouldn't agree with a lot of the stuff he says, but it's lovely to just listen to him sometimes. He should bring out, you know, some of these audio books, or maybe do an ASMR video or something like that, because it's so soothing
so
to listen
to. He's so sincere as well. Yeah. He really believes what he says as well.
It's not harsh like Pierce's accent. It's just nice lull to it and just brings you along, and God knows what he's saying. I'm not really
listening. Saying there's something wrong with the accent from that part of the country, Philip Ryan?
Absolutely not. I say it's fantastic.
We've decided very late in the day that Michael O'Regan is our senior man here tonight and is going to be the chair of the judges, of the judging panel. So there are nominations. We have two nominations for Leo for that New York speech. We have your own nomination for Richard Boyd Barrett, Thomas Pringle for his dulcet tones, and Piers Doherty for his general speechifying.
So Leo wins the day, thanks mainly to a strong Western surge there, which we heard.
Although the Galway jury.
I did notice that Mr. McGee did nod in the direction of my own nominee, Richard Boyd Barrett. But the Western section of this jury have won the day.
Okay.
Just wonder what will happen later, you know. I'm looking now at Aoife. Yeah. Will the Derry...
The North West.
Will the North West
will it pull
we're
up
only
that
a few
North
minutes
West
into this
pick.
And there's already been an Irish Times coup.
Okay, that's our first gong goes to Leo Varadkar for that moment, that incredible moment in time on the 12th of March, speaking from New York. Okay, moving on. Scoop of the year. Now, I can now reveal, and as we didn't allow conferring, we know that all of you came to this view entirely independently, but that for the first time in the history, in the long 3-year history of Late Debate Awards, we have a unanimous verdict and a clear winner in this category, because one of our judges voted for herself. So the scoop of the year, take a bow, Aoife Moore, for your scoop of the year with your colleague Paul Hosford for breaking, of course, the Golfgate story in the Irish Examiner in August. So again, for how many, I don't know how many congratulations you've had for this,
Thank you.
It was really the most extraordinary story. And let's just have a quick listen now to just a flavour, a tiny flavour of the absolutely extraordinary response that this story generated. It's going to start with Cormac, who had been staying in the Station House Hotel in Clifton in August. And he told, as it happens, myself on Liveline the day after the story broke, that he knew there would be trouble after he spotted a table seating plan in the foyer of the hotel.
And then I went up and I had a look at the table plan. And I could see names that I recognised, the names certainly recognised, obviously the minister's name, Phil Hogan's name. So I realised what was going on. There was a golf outing. It was another 50th anniversary of the Oireachtas Golf Society. Donny Cassidy and Noel Grealish and Brian Hayes recognised his name.
Yeah, the former minister.
The former minister.
Banking
Federation. I recognised Supreme Court Judge Seamus Wolfe.
I just, in total shock here, as you may be aware, my mother died of it. And these people are supposed to be leading us. I'm disgusted.
I had to bury my mother with no funeral.
I'm just so enraged, frustrated, incredulous. This is an Oireachtas Golf Society. What is so important?
Wasn't there one single one of them had the cop on or the intelligence to think or say or even realise?
I actually have a very clear memory of that last caller and thinking that was the thought that was running through so many people's heads that day. Wasn't there one single one of them that had the cop on to look around them and think, what are we doing here? Like, it was an extraordinary scoop, Aoife. I presume the minute you came upon it or you came upon this information, you knew immediately it was going to be massive.
Yeah, so we came upon the table plan. And as soon as we saw the table plan, we thought...
Just like Cormac there and there.
If this happened, this is a nightmare for the government. And it was, the first thing I did was I phoned the hotel and I very casually, which I didn't say I was a journalist, but very casually said, I was just wondering, did this event go ahead? And the receptionist said, yeah, it went ahead. I wasn't working, but I know it went ahead and there was around 80 people. And I just said, all right, that's grand, and put down the phone, and it just went from there.
Yeah, and it did go from there, because my memories of seeing it coming up on the online edition, and again, immediately thinking, wow, this is going to be big. Philip.
Oh, yeah, the minute we saw it.
I'm sure you would have killed to have.
The next thing I did was I rang all the team, and I said, hit the phones, find out what's going on here. We need to get this up online ourselves. We need to verify it ourselves. And we just went hammer and tongs at it ourselves. Like, just like, Jesus, what is this? It was huge. It just showed the kind of us versus them mentality there was no place for it during COVID.
Harry, what was the feeling in the Irish Times when this story broke online?
Well, we had our own podcast today. My colleague Jack Horgan-Jones, we were asked what was the story that we would have liked to have broken. And Jack gave a very good explanation as to why we would have loved to have broken that story as well. Not just the story itself, but what happened afterwards. I mean, it was almost like a domino effect. You had the resignation in short order of Darragh Cleary and then of Phil Hogan, and then the controversy surrounding Seamus Wolfe. We had controversy then surrounding broadcasters like Sean O'Rourke and others. And then that in its own thing started bringing the focus back on Seamus Wolfe and the process surrounding his appointment to the Supreme Court. So even now, this week, the ripple effects of that particular scoop is still being effect. So it was a story that worked its way in a multitude of ways. So yes, it was. I think Jack was saying he would have bitten his hand off, I think, to have got the story. And I think that he was speaking for us all. It was a fantastic scoop for the Examiner and fair play to them. And it was without a doubt. And as we saw with the unanimous decision tonight, it was undoubtedly the scoop of the year as far as political journalism was concerned.
Oh, absolutely. Michael, rarely, really, even looking back over decades, rarely has one single story, which then, of course, you know, triggered many more, but one single story really was what triggered all of that political fallout, that number of resignations, you know, that number of careers ended.
Yeah, quite astonishing. I first saw Aoife's tweet and then I read the story online, and like everyone else, I said, oh God, this is serious for those who had bacon and cabbage or whatever it was.
Turkey and ham.
Yeah, I did think one thing, Katie.
Was it turkey and ham?
Too early for turkey and ham. But I did think that while it was right that Darragh Cleary resigned as a minister, I thought it was unfair that he had to resign as deputy leader of Fianna Fáil and honorary secretary of the party.
I think that was demanded of him.
Oh, it was demanded of him. Absolutely demanded of him, yeah. And a non-golfer. He went along to this dinner in good faith, spent about an hour there, I gather. He was asked to go along to pay tribute to the late Mark Killalea, former Fianna Fáil TD and MEP, who was a prominent member of the Golf Society for years. He knew Mark Killalea, he was a friend of Mark Killalea's. So he went along, made his speech. There were members of the Killalea family there that night, and then left. And, it shouldn't have happened. But I thought what was demanded of him within the Fianna Fáil party was unfair.
Yeah, Larry, you don't like the term Golfgate.
No, I have a specific objection to the golf gate. I don't think the game made them do. I say that as somebody who plays avidly but not well. The game didn't make them all eat together. They all ate together. I would call it dinner gate rather than golf gate. But the issue for me here is, and I think it played into a narrative, and I think that the clip you played from Liveline there, Katie, captured that. It really gave this idea that, you know, one rule for everybody else, one rule for us. And also, I think this perception in society that politicians just brazen it out, that they might make mistakes, but they keep going. Well, this is what made this scandal really stand out and really made the scoop stand out, is that it claimed an awful lot of scalp. Rightly or wrongly, the fact is that it did. And it put paid, I think, to some extent, to that narrative that politicians don't resign. They do their own thing, and that's that. This time, a lot of people did pay a very, very high price for a mistake.
They sure did. So that's it. That's our second gong of the night goes to Aoife and Paul at the Examiner for the undisputed scoop of the year.
Thank you.
Now, we have a new category this year, and it's one we could not possibly have even imagined this time last year, but absolutely unavoidable after the year we've had. It's the Celebrity Medic Scientist, Stroke Scientist of the Year. Harry, give us your nomination.
My top scientists, so there were quite a few. I mean, I like lots of them, and there are very few of them I wouldn't have time for. But my top scientist, well, he's a medic really, is Dr. Mike Ryan of the World Health Organization. And I just think he's been phenomenal. I think we should be very proud of him as an Irish thing. He was in college in Galway actually around the same time as I was.
Yeah, there's a big dispute about who's claiming him, Sligo or Mayo.
I think he might actually be from somewhere like, you know, just between Tubbercurry and Charlestown, which is very close to the border. But he is a he's a phenomenal guy. He has been with the WHO for all of his careers, for effectively for 30 years. He's been that soldier. He's been to Africa following, being one of the frontline defenders for Ebola outbreaks. He's an expert in infectious disease, as is his wife, Professor Maura Connolly, who's now based in NUI Galway. But what really struck his impact, or what really borne it home, was that extraordinary speech he made earlier in the year that has been quoted ad infinitum by political leaders all over the world, where he said that speed trumps perfection. And if any time you had a formula of words that described how one must deal with COVID, and we're seeing it happening before our very eyes this week, that one phrase and those powerful words to me were just freighted with meaning and freighted with impact. And I just think that he's been a steady hand, he's been realistic, he's been pragmatic, he's not overdramatic, he's not prone to hyperbole. And for that reason, I nominate him as my top scientist stroke medic of the year.
Okie doke. Okay, that's Mike Ryan gets one nomination. Philip?
I went with Dr. Ronan Glynn of Enfield.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, because just during that period when he was in charge, I thought
he had the toughest time, because I think everyone was on board for that first phase of things. Then obviously Dr. Hoolan had to step aside for family reasons, and then things kind of were more difficult, weren't they?
It was during a tougher time when things were getting worse again. But I think he took a lot of the drama out of it. He wasn't the kind of, and it's no criticism of Tony Hoolan, but he's become somewhat of a symbol or a figurehead for this, and there's always a bit of drama around him and the things he did. And even when he came back and took his job over, again there was, you know, straight in with level
like
five.
Tony,
but when Ronan Glynn was there, it just seemed a lot calmer and
yeah,
like,
he is very low key in his
exactly
favorite.
Yeah,
Aoife, you nominated him as well.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest, like, I don't really buy into the whole celebrity doctor, celebrity scientist thing. It kind of makes me a bit uncomfortable, but I did also just go for Ronan Glynn because he's quite low key. And I think, you know, with science the way it is, and we should all be, you know, really believing it and stuff like this, I just think the celebrity around doctors makes me a bit uneasy, and I think they should just be allowed to do their jobs. And we've seen what happens, you know, these celebrity doctors just fly too close to
the sun.
To
be fair,
sun.
Celebrity is a bit of a facetious term
late
from our
show,
point of view.
Ronan
No, that was Tony.
I think Tony Holland was on about.
But I think, I suppose the point we're saying that all these doctors and scientists were, perhaps from Tony Holland, where people might have known him as CMO before that, but most of these people were entirely unknown to us. And now they are literally household names. Yeah. I mean, it's an extraordinary.
Some of them are loving it now, in fairness.
Some of them are very good at it as well, I think.
And we've also seen, you know, with certain doctors who flew too close to the sun and ended up in their own kind of scandals themselves. And I think, you know, the better we just leave them to do their jobs and that kind of thing after COVID, all the better.
What about yourself, Michael? What's your nomination here?
I'm going for Luke O'Neill, the Trinity College academic, because I think he's an excellent communicator. He also knows his stuff. He manages as well to, even in tough days, bad days, when the figures are bad, to pick some kind of optimistic note out of it. Now, he doesn't let us, meaning the people out there, get away with anything. You know, self-isolate, wear your mask, etc., etc. Occasionally, he throws in a bit of humour. He's been very good on the vaccines. And I think his communication skills, and for that reason, I would give it to him. Now, I have to say, Katie, he did give advice to men of a certain age, myself, that on Christmas Day we should sit by the window with the window open. Well, thanks very much, Luke, but I'm not getting pneumonia trying to dodge, you know, the virus. So, Katie, I'm going to the attic with a turkey sandwich.
Good to know, good to know. So we have Luke O'Neill, two nominations for Ronan Glynn. Larry.
I went for Tony Holohan, and the reason I did that was in the early days of the pandemic when, let's face it, we were all scared, we were all very uncertain, we didn't know what was going to happen. His was the face who, on a nightly basis, captured the nation's attention, brought us all to a halt and to a standstill to listen. And again, when I think the history books are written about COVID-19 in Ireland, I think his face is going to be very eminent in the telling of that story. So in that grander scheme of things, Tony Holohan to me is the medic, the most prominent medic at least of 2020.
Okay, so we have Mike Ryan, Tony Holohan, Luke O'Neill and Ronan Glynn.
So Ronan Glynn wins, yes.
Ronan Glynn.
Yeah. Quite impressive guy, actually, I think.
He is. He's a very young man. The position he found himself in there, as we said, when Tony Holohan had to step aside for that period, was an extraordinary position of responsibility. And as you say, I think it's agreed he carried it well. So Ronan Glynn wins that gong. We move on to Political Podcast of the Year. And I mean, there's been just an explosion of political podcasts. And I think with everything that's happening as well, the American election, the Brexit rolling on and here. So I just like American stuff. A lot of us were stuck into things like the 538 Politics podcast, the New York Times, the Daily, the NPR Politics podcast, excellent. And then the Brexit thing, the Europolitics and Brexit Republic broadcasts from the political teams in here, the BBC's Brexit cast, the Echo Chamber podcast, Mick Clifford's podcast. You picked not any one of those. None of you picked any of those. But we do have a selection of year selections. We'll just have a listen.
Hello, my name's David Runciman, and this is Talking Politics. Today, we're going to be looking beyond COVID, beyond Brexit, and asking, where is the long-term opposition to Boris Johnson's government?
Welcome to the Journal.ie's The Explainer, where every week we take a deep dive into a different news story. I'm Sinead O'Carroll, and this week, what is Ireland's vaccination rollout plan?
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm John Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vietor.
On today's pod, it's Vaccine Day and Electoral College Day.
Hello, I'm Kevin Doyle, and this is The Floating Voter, special in association with EY. Last week on the podcast, we had Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue telling us about a budget that he said gave us reasons to be hopeful for the period ahead.
Welcome to Worldview, a foreign affairs podcast from the Irish Times. Well, if somebody gave me a euro or a pound for every time I began this podcast by saying it's a big week in the Brexit process, I probably wouldn't have to do this podcast anymore.
And there are the five nominations we have. And I think we might have to bring in a new rule that you can't vote for your own podcast.
Well, I hope nobody voted for their own podcast.
Well, I'm very sorry to break the news to you, Harry, but Philip Ryan did vote for the
Mr. Ryan, would you leave the building?
We were asked to vote for the best, were we not?
Oh. I thought modesty, Katie, was supposed to be a defining feature of this programme.
Absolutely not.
So, Philip, you win for the Floating Voter podcast, a very well-established podcast.
Yeah,
now.
I still think it's the best podcast. We put a lot of work into it. We got great guests. It was brilliant stuff during the election, some of the stuff that was said on it. We had one podcast where we had Michael Noonan and Pascal Donoghue together in there trying to make a last-minute rallying call. We had Micheál Martin on there. He made the comments about Helen McEntee. I don't know if you remember when she said he made quite derogatory remark.
Got a lot of pickup from that.
Yeah, and she ended up being his justice minister. So that came back to haunt him.
Michael, you went for the Irish Times.
I did, but I wasn't part
podcast.
Of it, Katie. I stress, I wasn't on the Irish Times.
Wait a second.
I wasn't on that.
I think you'll find that Michael is no longer with the Irish Times.
He's still.
I was exempt from bias, Philip, because I'm one step removed. But I did, and I went for a recent one, which managed to make Brexit interesting. I mean, my God. And a great reference to a rather dishevelled, badly dressed British Prime Minister in Brussels recently. Remember the cut of him, the coat and the stomach protruding through the jacket and all that kind of thing. Con Hoolan had a great phrase, when you saw a player having a bad day, he used to say, as bewildered as a Kerryman in Paris. Here was a British Prime Minister bewildered in Brussels, and unlike the Kerryman in Paris, very badly dressed. But I would agree with you, there's so many podcasts out there. Yeah. They're all very good. And many of them are actually detached from the mainstream media, outside the mainstream media. They're all excellent.
Yeah, which is excellent as well, because you do...
Even Phillips.
Even Phillips detached from the mainstream media. We'll go over to the Galway jury briefly. Larry, you went for the explainer from the Journal.
Yeah, I suppose I'm open to the accusation of being a bit tribal on that one as well. But in all seriousness, the reason I went for the explainer is because, in my view, it reaches, a different audience to some level. It reaches a beyond the Leinster House bubble audience, I think, because the slightly different readership of the Journal. And what it does, I think, is it explains and makes legible a lot of current affairs and political affairs that are going on, whether it's COVID or what's happening in Leinster House or what's happening further afield, and couples that with, I think, some really good in-depth commentary. So I think they've done a terrific job with it as it's gone on. And it's relatively new, but it's developing all the time. I think it's a terrific podcast, as I should say. I think all of those nominated are.
Harry?
Well, I was too modest to
and
suggest.
Now you're kicking yourself.
Well, it has already won the podcast of the year, so we didn't want to kind of take too many gongs during 2020. The podcast, I mean, I love podcasts. I absolutely adore podcasts. I listen to them all the time. I listen to the New York Daily almost on a daily basis, as you were saying, NPR. But the one that I really have liked this year is one called Talking Politics, which was presented by David Runciman. And his most regular guest is Helen Thompson, who is Professor of Politics in Oxford. And they started off the year talking about Brexit, and they've spoken about Brexit a lot during the year, but they've also spoken about COVID. And it's about British politics, but it's also about political theory and about world politics. It sounds a bit boring, but it's actually always absorbing listening. And they take a really deep dive into the issue. And what I like about it is that they put it into historical context. And I mean, I think there's been a couple of, I think the RTE Politics podcast is excellent as well. I've listened to it. I think the Indo one is very good as well, and I listened to it.
So just that to is be, very big excellent. Of you, Larry, can I just say.
I
also think
Irish
that even though they're not political, I think to RTE, I love the long form ones. And I think RTE has done an amazing job this year with the Nobody Zone, which was fantastic. And also the one on George Gibney, which I thought was absolutely
superb,
spectacular as well, even though they're outside the sphere of politics.
And may well have reopened the possibility of some movement in that case as well, which would be really an extraordinary achievement. Aoife, before we move out of podcast.
Yeah, I have tried to pull myself away from the lovely Philip and Harry's podcast because it's too much like work now. Although I have been obsessed with Pod Save America for years since actually kind of don't know what I'm going to do when Trump's not the president anymore because it's so much news value. And I've also listened to an Irish podcast right recently that's kind of politics adjacent. It's called Policed and it's about the Yardie and different
that
cases.
That is...
It's Dr. Vicky Conway,
who is a brilliant expert. Has literally written the book on this.
Yeah, and because I lived away for 7-8 years in Scotland, a lot of the kind of modern stuff with the Yardie totally passed me by. So I always feel like I'm learning something when I'm listening to it as well.
Okay, and there's one more before we close nominations, Michael. I want to put forward for your consideration one of my favourites. It's actually not strictly a podcast, but because I never hear it live, it's a podcast to me always, and that's Callan's Kicks. And I just wanted to play a clip from, this is just from last Friday's Callan's Kicks.
You, Dr. Leo, will administer the first COVID vaccine in the Republic.
Yes! OMG.
Yes.
Wow.
Here's a nice bill. The first person injected by Dr. Leo, a frontline worker, a student nurse called Ashley.
So on brand.
Spincredible. That's why we pay you stupid amounts of taxpayers' money. Now,
That's Callan's Kicks, Oliver Callan's.
Oliver, who Callan's, has been on the floating voter this year.
Oh my God.
That's from last Friday's programme, which extraordinarily, Colin Brophy actually suggested this at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting this week.
I think it was Colin Burke, actually.
Oh, was it Colin Burke?
Yeah. Life imitating art.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely. Michael, there's your. Well, I'll just give you the nominations again. Mm. It's. Talking Politics, David Runciman's Talking Politics, that's Harry's one. The Explainer from the journal.ie, the one you nominated yourself from the Irish Times podcast, the Floating Voter podcast, and Pod Save America from IFA.
So I have a casting vote.
You do?
Katie, well, I don't want to be accused of bias. And as Harry rightly pointed out, the Irish Times podcast has already won an award. So I'll go for Callan's Kicks.
Fair play to you, Michael. Not that I put any pressure on you whatsoever.
The way you looked at me, Kate. That was a dagger.
That's my Sally O'Brien look. Okay, that is another gong goes to Callan's Kicks. Just a couple of texts in on our previous gongs. No debate where Mike Ryan is from, Katie. He's from a little village called Curry in County Sligo. Your guest is spot on. Curry is nestled between Tubbercurry in County Sligo and Charleston in County Mayo. And I'm very glad to clear that up for once and for all. And on the Media Medics one, says a texter, Professor Sam McConkie is by far the best, most consistent, calm and clear person during all of this. We give him 3 votes of this house, 100%. We didn't even get a nomination for Sam, and actually I was surprised at that because he is obviously one of our most prominent medics this year. Okay, Tweet of the Year is our next category. Harry, what did you nominate for this one?
I found that one really difficult because I have a mind like a sieve. So, I mean, if a tweet is more than 40 seconds old, I kind of tend to forget it. So the ones that I kind of tended to remember were the negative ones. So, and unfortunately, most of them seem to be coming from Sinn Féin this year, and most recently from Brian Stanley, and earlier on in the year from some of his colleagues.
Okay.
So for that reason, I nominate the unfortunate tweets that were, and the actual quite offensive tweet in one instance that was sent out by Brian Stanley of Sinn Féin.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, Larry, I'm just looking at the clock here and we have a good few categories to get through. So very quickly, who are you nominating here?
For Tweet of the Year, I nominate collectively all of the Donald Trump tweets saying that he won the election by landslide.
Excellent. Michael O'Regan.
I'm going for Micheál Hahn's tweet on which revealed that NPHET had advised a level 5 lockdown.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
It was a Sunday evening.
One. Yes.
I remember seeing the tweet and then, of course, the 9 o'clock news when Micheál was interviewed from outside government buildings. Now, this stunned the nation.
But subsequent to that, that was the night, wasn't it, that Leo Varadkar...
The following night then, on the Clare Byrne programme on television,
yeah, and that's
Leo Varadkar excoriated NPHET. And this had huge implications. So I think in terms of
a moment
impact, yeah, this was a big moment.
It was, for sure. Philip?
I went with another Sinn Féin tweet as well, but not as offensive as some of the other ones. This one is from David Cullinan, who spotted a picture of Leo Varadkar in the shoe shop, Thomas Patrick, and he tweeted, 3 counties in lockdown, many businesses still closed, frontline health staff at breaking point and high unemployment levels across the country, and Leo Varadkar is trying on fashion shoes.
I do remember then there was a big debate as to what fashion shoes actually referred to.
I love a
Is there such a thing as fashion shoes?
And a fashion shirt, fashion jacket.
Aoife.
I've gone for a funny one as well. It was the day that it came out that Ming Flanagan's Twitter had allegedly been hacked looking for photos of Saoirse McHugh, and Saoirse McHugh,
which, let's be clear, was completely
completely denied. It was totally alleged at the time, but it was hacked. But Saoirse McHugh, there was a lot of attention on her that day, and it was the day we found out that Brian Hayes was going to the bank in Lobby, and Saoirse McHugh tweeted in the same way that the
looking alleged, like somebody had hacked,
had hacked her, and she wrote Brian Hayes revolving door.
Yes, very clever. Yeah, she is very, very clever on Twitter. If you follow her, you see she understands the medium very, very well. Very quickly, Michael, who we go for there?
Well, it's the broad Sinn Féin family, given that Philip nominated Sinn Féin and Harry nominated Brian Stanley. I'm very glad the hotelier from Clare didn't win it, nominated by Larry, because Mr. Trump wouldn't be here to receive the reward.
True. So we'll give it to Sinn Féin for there are many, many tweets of this year. Okay, very quickly then we'll move on to Apology of the Year. And I have to say, once we started looking at this, a very crowded field. I think we have... can we play them one by one? Or okay, let's. This is one from... this is Phil Hogan, which was one of the big apologies.
Of course, I broke no law when I went to Ireland. I broke no regulations, but I could have adhered better to the guidelines. And this was a distraction, of course, for many people at a time when they were trying to grapple with the seriousness of this pandemic.
OK, I'm just being told in my ear it was Michael Darcy, revolving door.
Michael Darcy,
Just to be clear about that, not Brian Hayes. So that was Phil Hogan after Golfgate. We didn't get any nomination for Phil Hogan, did we? I'm just looking down through my list of nominations here. But we did get...
As I hear that, that's up there.
We did get a nomination for Leo Varadkar from yourself, Michael.
Yes, I thought Leo Varadkar's apology on leaking the IMO document to a rival organisation of GPs was the apology of the year. He was very lucky to escape that. He escaped it because he was Taoiseach and Fine Gael leader. If you look back at precedents like Golfgate and everything else, if he had been a minister or a junior minister, he would have had to resign. It was a narrow escape.
Yeah, I think... Do we have it, Brian? Let's have a listen.
I know this caused people to question my judgment, but I hope, having heard my explanation, no fair-minded person will question my motivation or integrity. I do regret it, and I am sorry for the controversy and the annoyance that my actions have caused.
So that was Leo Varadkar on that issue over the leaking of the document. Philip, you went for one that we don't have audio of because we never heard it said.
Yeah, but when you played Phil Hogan, you can throw them both in together. But it was Phil Hogan and, let's say, Seamus Wolfe as well, because with Phil Hogan, you got so many apologies. You got a week of apologies, really, didn't you? Or 2 weeks before he eventually decided or was decided for him, it was time to go. And the same with Seamus Wolfe. We got an apology. It was sent out in an email. But then we found that the transcript of his interrogation afterwards, that he really didn't seem to mean it. He thought it was all a big media frenzy and everyone should just leave him alone and let him be a Supreme Court judge.
I just have the transcript of the original apology here in my hand. He describes how he ended up there and kind of basically found himself in the situation. And he says, I attended based on that understanding. Sorry, I say, on learning of the proposed dinner during the course of that day, my understanding was that the organisers and the hotel had satisfied themselves that they would be operating within government public health guidelines. I attended based on that understanding that it would be within the guidelines, but do apologise for any unintentional breach of any of the new guidelines on my part. And then he went on to say, I would never disregard governmental or health authorities' advice regarding public health and have been at pains to follow rules and guidelines since their introduction in March. That I ended up in a situation where breaches may have occurred is of great regret to me and for which I am sorry. I unreservedly apologise.
You would probably call that poor judgment, really. And by someone who, Leo Varadkar says, a very good judge.
Okay. So that's your nomination is Seamus Wolfe. Aoife?
Mine is bordering on the ridiculous. The apology that I picked is actually a two-parter, but only one part of it was funny. It was the Martin Brown apology for sharing 9/11 conspiracy theories. I just thought nothing summed up 2020 better than an elected official apologising for sharing 9/11 conspiracy theories about holograms. I just thought, well, what a perfect end to 2020.
Indeed. Okay, very quickly, Harry.
Yeah, I mean, we had an apology a week. I think that the best or the quickest and real apology was that of Dara Cleary, because he said sorry and he was gone. And there was no beating around the bush, and everything else was kind of carefully phrased, modulated. And when you listen to it, you kind of said they actually began to sound very samey as the year went on. My thing was a toss-up between Helen McEntee, Leo Varadkar and Brian Stanley. I think in the end, I just went for Leo Varadkar because I just think he had to explain himself at inordinate length. And I think I'd agree with Michael that he was kind of lucky to come out of that intact at the end.
Indeed. And Larry?
I picked two by Micheál Martin, but the one that I'll mention was a non-apology. And this is when Micheál Martin told the story about a woman who had been approached, allegedly by Michael Healy Ray, about a bus that would take people for cataract surgery.
Oh.
Michael Healy Ray absolutely exploded in reaction to that. Micheál Martin's reaction to that was to say, "I apologize, but the story was told to me." So it was a total non-apology in reaction to what Michael Healy Ray had said.
Yeah, I think if anyone was listening to the Claire Byrne show this morning, actually that was replayed, and it is, it's quite an entertaining moment from the Dáil record. Michael, which one? Who will we give the apology of the year to?
Well, Harry and myself both went for Leo Varadkar, so he wins an award. I don't think he's probably terribly happy with, but there you are.
Okay, double gong winner of the night so far. That's Leo Varadkar. I think we'll try and slip in a quick break here, but stay with us because we have some of the big awards to come before the night is out.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannon on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, we have to speed things up, I'm told, because there are so many gongs and so little time. Political newcomer of the year. We got actually more than one nomination from most of you, and every single nomination we got was a woman, which is not extraordinary at all, actually. No, that's so I'll just run through them very quickly. Michael, who did you go for?
I went for Holly Cairns of the Social Democrats. I think she's very, very impressive, whether you agree or disagree with her. She was very good, for instance, in opposing a motion to advocate. She was against funding for the greyhound industry.
Oh, do you know what? I think we do have that clip, actually.
I'm calling on all parties to stop falling prey to lobbying. The solution is clear. We need to stand up and acknowledge the reality of this industry and stop throwing a blind eye to its abuse and more money at its failings.
Yeah, just a very quick clip of Holly. Yeah, I think she's...
I think she's excellent. She was also, by the way, referred to as an ignorant little girl.
Because of that.
Because
actually,
of that.
Isn't it? It's because of her work on that.
Yeah, which is appalling.
Philip?
I think this one is a no-brainer, and I'm surprised at Michael for not picking it as well, actually. But it has to be Norma Foley. There's no one in the Dáil that has actually been faced with a proper task from last year being a county councillor and a teacher to this year, being the minister responsible during a pandemic
for one of the most important policy.
Yeah, there's no one else in the Dáil who has been lumped with something so serious.
Michael, how could you overlook the Kerry woman that
like
is normal?
A speech about greyhounds versus getting the kids burst back
to
school.
It was traumatic. Very traumatic, Katie, but I've come through it.
Okay.
A better person. I agree, by the way, with everything Philip said.
Aoife?
Yeah, I went for Holly Cairns as well. I totally agree with what Philip was saying, but I just think, for women of a certain age and from a certain background, there's just something about seeing Holly Cairns in the Dáil, and I think she's definitely in the running to be the next leader of the Social Democrats, and I just think there's no one else really like her in the Dáil at the
moment.
She'll
be the third leader.
No, she'll be on her own.
Okay, the Galway jury, Harry.
Yeah, I went for Holly Cairns too. I agree completely with what Philip is saying.
Why is someone voting for her?
In relation to Norma Foley, though, as well. I think Norma Foley has was thrown into the deep end and showed very quickly that she was well capable of swimming.
And was, as we said, I think underestimated by some of the commentary at the beginning, and then sort of earned some respect along the way.
Yeah, I mean, she had a tricky start. I mean, she was kind of thrown into the deep end and in the middle of a crisis and with schools and leaving cert, and she had to deal with a very complex situation. And she encountered a couple of rocky weeks at the start, but once she once she got through those weeks, she has been very, very assured indeed. But I think Holly Cairns, for her Greyhound thing, I think that has been an extraordinary initiative from her, and she has really had a very impressive first 10 months as ATD.
Yes. Okay, Larry.
I went for Jennifer Carroll McNeil, who, although she's been around politics for a while, newly elected, and I think whenever I see her, she strikes me as a very strong and capable media performer, and I think she's done a very, very good job, and is already one of the most sought-after faces in Fine Gael, and popular faces in Fine Gael, at least nationally, and again, to the people who I think inhabit that world beyond the Leinster House bubble.
Indeed, yes. Okay, so Jennifer Carroll McNeil, Holly Cairns, Norma Foley, and then, as you say, a number of nominations for Holly. Michael?
Oh, it's Holly Cairns, yeah. I think Holly has got it because she's struggling from the opposition benches. This is not remotely to take from Norma Foley's performance, but
okay
she would have the backup.
He hastily adds okay now, thinking, I'll be home and Kerry soon.
She would have the backup of the civil service, etc., etc.
What will they say in Blenheimville?
But I mean,
I can't go home. Just as well there's a pandemic, Katie. I can't go home for a long time.
Well, I tell you, I have a text in here. Great to have that lovely Kerry man back on the radio. Good health, Michael.
That's my first cousin, Katie.
Okay, very quickly, we will move on. Minister of the Year. We were talking about this earlier and a colleague said you should say that you're going to have an award for Agriculture Minister of the Year, but you couldn't agree on the shortlist. But this is for Minister of the Year. So I'll go to the Galway jury first this time. Larry, who did you nominate?
I nominated Simon Coveney. I think consistently competent leadership with a huge amount on his plate, huge challenges to deal with. And I think, again, he's been consistent and competent.
Okay, Hugh, that's Simon Coveney. Harry?
Another Simon Harris. I think he went from being a spent force in the run-up to the election as Minister for Health to putting in a remarkable and smooth stint during the first phase of the pandemic. He combined that kind of quality he has of a lot of energy, quick talking, but also a kind of calmness. He had to endure a moron coughing in his face during it as well. And he kept his gaffe count relatively low. I think his only big gaffe was he described COVID-19 in terms of the previous 18 COVIDs, when, of course, none of them existed.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be really delighted you're reminding people of that tonight.
Well, I mean, everyone has a bit of a dent in the armour, but he's been less prominent since he became Minister for Higher Education. But I think just for his calmness and assuredness during those first... during that critical first phase of COVID, I think he probably deserves my nod for the Minister of the Year.
And do you agree with him, Philip?
Yeah, I would go as far as saying that he almost caused the general election year through the handling of the health service. But, like, look, that's a poison chalice no matter what. But from that, he moved into, you know, emergency mode, taking on the pandemic. He was one of the voices alongside Leo Varadkar, Pascal Donoghue and others that guided us through that early part when no one really knew what was going on. And like Harry said, it has that way about him that you can kind of talk his way out of a hole.
Aoife.
Yeah,
I went for the other Simon.
I went for Coveney as well. Brexit's obviously very important to me because I'm from the border, but I just feel like he's always the adult in the room. I think we've seen a lot of ridiculousness in Dáil Éireann over the last year.
And in Westminster as well,
the other thing is Brexit's really boring. Like, I'm sure when he stands up a cabinet, everybody like rolls their eyes. But like he's really dedicated. He's a statesman, he's bones, he's so diplomatic. I just think to try and
be so positive,
to be that passionate about something that is that boring. We've been talking about fish for like a month. So just for his dedication to the role and being an adult and sensible, I'm going to go for Simon Coveney.
Okay, now Simon Coveney gets your nomination. Michael O'Regan.
I'm going for Pascal Dunne, the Minister for Finance. I think he's in a very difficult position at a time when we're borrowing a lot of money to spend. I think he's the prudence which he showed last year because of Brexit put us in a fairly good position. And then, of course, the pandemic came. I also think he's an excellent communicator when he goes on radio and television.
I think he's very much considered the safe pair of hands. You know, when things are getting sticky or wobbly, you're very likely to hear Pascal.
I mean, if this government is in trouble, and it's in trouble a lot, you send out Pascal or Simon Harris. But I give it to Pascal Donoghue.
OK, that's your nomination.
My nomination.
No, but as a completely independent judge, we have two nominations for Simon Harris and two nominations for Simon Coveney.
So I, at the casting vote, now, when nobody was looking, I tossed a coin. I know, Katie, you told me not to do that, but I did it. And Simon Harris.
Simon Harris. Okay, gong, the gong there for Minister of the Year, a very coveted honour, obviously, is going to Simon Harris. Now, what have we left to do? Brass neck of the year. Let's sneak in the brass neck of the year. Larry, who did you go for there?
I went for the Sinn Féin politicians at the Bobby Storey funeral. I thought that at the time, in the face of all the public health advice and in terms of politicians trying to lead by example, I thought it sent all the wrong signals, and I thought it was a huge mistake, and I thought it flouted what everyone else is trying to do their best to do.
Okay. Harry?
Mary Lou MacDonald, and for the same reason, I think the Bobby Storey funeral, but also the way that she kind of muscled her way into the narrative around the time of the general election, and this kind of roadshow that Sinn Féin had in the wake of the election, kind of claiming that Mary Lou was the real Taoiseach. That showed considerable brass neck. Sometimes brass neck isn't all that bad. It might be a good quality in politics. It was good maybe in that respect, but I thought it was quite negative in terms of what happened around the Bobby Storey funeral.
Okay, and I'll ask you to be quick. Aoife?
Yeah, mine is the most recent. It is Micheál Martin telling Richard Boyd Barrett that thousands of people would emigrate if he ran the country. I mean, there's no.
Oh, not to mention about there was no bank bailout. Yeah, obviously, that's been clarified.
Yeah. The bank bailout thing, I get, but for someone who was in government with Fianna Fáil the last time telling someone else that thousands of people would emigrate if they were in charge of the country, there's neck and then there's neck.
Philip.
Yeah, fully agree. It's Micheál Martin. It just came out of nowhere. It was. I had yesterday where I was actually rang politicians who were in previous Fianna Fáil governments just to check with them. Do they remember the bank bailout?
Okay, so we've two nominations there. Who are you going for, Michael?
I give it to the government, actually, for their failure over several weeks to have Helen McEntee, Minister for Justice, answer questions in the Dáil about the nomination of Seamus Wolfe to the Supreme Court. It beggars belief that they couldn't allow the Minister for Justice, for whom I have a lot of sympathy. I think she was just caught in the crossfire. And it took them ages, and eventually she did come in.
She did. And it was, as you say, inevitable all the time, but they held out for many weeks. Okay, so we have a good mixture of nominations there, but two for the Taoiseach for yesterday's engagement with Richard Boyd Barrett. Who are we going to go for, Michael?
Again, I tossed a coin, Katie. I'll go for Sinn Féin, the broader Sinn Féin family, so to speak.
Okie doke, so that one's there. I think we have to take one very quick ad break, but stay with us because before we go, we want to give the final gong for Politician of the Year.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
OK, we're nearly out of time, so I'm going to ask for one sentence from each of you in nominating your Politician of the Year. I'll start with you, Aoife.
Yeah, I've changed mine, but I'm going for Simon Harris. I think in the first start of the year as Health Minister, and I think in the second part of the year in a portfolio that he probably didn't want, he's kind of took off flying, and I think he's probably the most recognisable and the best this year.
OK, your Politician of the Year, Simon Harris. Michael?
Catherine Connolly, the independent TD for Galway, for a number of reasons. One is her very balanced non-political contributions in the Dáil. She also was elected as Leas Ceann Comhairle, the first woman, by the way. There's never been a woman Leas Ceann Comhairle or Ceann Comhairle, so she broke the glass ceiling. Excellent TD.
OK, Catherine Connolly. Philip Ryan.
I went with three, and that is the...
You can't go with three.
It is a three-headed beast. Oh, it is the Coalition of Cerberus. It is the Micheál, Leo and Eamon.
Oh, my God.
It is the three people who got together in the pandemic. And
the Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity, there you go.
OK, very quickly, Harry.
Ono Brenna Sinn Féin, just all-around parity. He's become an expert in his brief, and he's kind of one of the go-to guys in Sinn Féin when they need to come... to somebody to come out and explain the party's position, irrespective of what it is.
Okay, and finally, Larry, very quickly.
Sorry, going further afield. Joe Biden, third run for the presidency, 78, down and out after Iowa and New Hampshire, roars back to win the Democratic nomination and defeats the guy who sucked all the oxygen out of politics around the world. He has to be Politician of the Year.
Okay, this is a big call here, Michael O'Regan, Ono Brin, Joe Biden, Catherine Connolly, the Holy... we didn't get Ono Brin, sorry.
Throw Norma Foley in there as well. Just for good
Norma
measure.
Foley, Simon Harris. Go for it. Or Joe Biden.
I'm going to be very objective here. I think Catherine Connolly narrowly ahead of Ono Brin.
who actually wasn't nominated, even though it was on one of the lists that that you gave us there. Okay, that's it. That's all we have time for tonight and indeed for this year. So it's a goodbye from all the team on Late Debate. Tonight's special was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon. Padraig Kearney was on sound. I want to thank my excellent judging panel. I want to thank you all for listening. I'll be back with you on Saturday with Katie Hannan. But for now, it's over to Colin Murray on Late Date.